Today, grab a seatbelt as market volatility shakes confidence and prices. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And this is our weekly market update where we start in the US, go across to Europe, Asia, and end in Australia and cover gold, crypto, and oil in the process. Well, it was another crazy week on the markets as geopolitical worries collided with the stronger, higher for longer to fight sticky inflation mantra, and big tech looked overvalued. The brief latest flare-up in the Middle East tensions seemed contained, with the flight to bonds, gold, and the US dollar waning. Oil fell. The Dow Jones Index rose 0.6% after Tehran downplayed reports of an Israeli strike on Iran. US Treasury 10-year yields dropped to 4.62% and the US dollar was little changed. The regional escalation also briefly sent the price of gold back near to its record high, above $2,400 an ounce, and Brent crude rose above $90 a barrel. Both commodities paired gains after the International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed there was no damage to Iran's nuclear sites. As I discussed yesterday, the drumbeat of downbeat comments from the US Federal Reserve and the flare-up in inflation worries have weighed heavily on sentiment, with investors trimming their bets on the keenly anticipated central bank pivot. Federal Reserve officials actually have said that they will need to see more data to become confident enough that inflation is headed to the 2% target before starting to cut interest rates. And Atlanta Federal Reserve Bank President Rafael Bostic on Thursday said that if inflation does not continue to move towards the US central bank's goal of 2%, central bankers would need to consider an interest rate hike. Well, that's a pivot in a completely different direction. For some economists, the won't get fooled again mindset is now in high gear. Bank of America economists, for example, advise that there's a real risk that rate cuts will be delayed until March 2025 at the earliest. The PCE price data for March, which is, of course, the US inflation measure, is coming out next week, and consensus forecasts are expecting a mixed bag for the one-year change, a slightly higher headline PCE to 2.5%, and a tick down for core PCE at 2.7%, but we'll see. And a sell-off in the so-called Magnificent Seven technology stocks dragged the NASDAQ down 2.05% on Friday, and traders remained cautious on riskier assets ahead of the weekend amid those geopolitical uncertainties. Netflix said that it would stop reporting quarterly membership numbers and average revenue per membership starting next year. In fact, the announcement overshadowed the video streaming giant's better-than-expected first-quarter results, sending Netflix shares down more than 9%. And as well as the slump in Netflix, the other tech titans, including Amazon, Microsoft, Alphabet, Apple, and Meta platforms, were in the red, with the latter down 4% after Apple said that it would pull Meta's Instagram and Threads apps from its app store in China following pressure from Beijing's internet regulator. And Tesla fell nearly 2% as the electric vehicle maker is recalling nearly 3,900 of its Cybertrucks owing to a defective accelerator pedal pad, the US National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said in a recall report. And Nvidia fell a further 10%. The S&P 500 fell for the sixth consecutive drop, down 0.88% to close at 4,967.23 on Friday. That's the longest losing streak since October 2022, and its third consecutive weekly decline, the longest losing run since September. After a 10% gain in the first quarter, the strongest start to a year since 2019, investors have become increasingly skeptical about how much further it will go over the near term, even accounting for the continued strength in the economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.6%. The Stoxx 600 in Europe fell 0.4%. Procter & Gamble stock gained 0.5% after the consumer goods giant's third quarter net sales fell short of expectations, even as it raised its annual profit forecast as commodity costs fall. American Express stocks rose 6% after the financial services giant's first quarter profits vaulted past estimates, driven by an affluent customer base that increased spending as recession fears ebbed away. Paramount Global stocks soared 13% after the blockbuster sale of the entertainment giant to David Ellison's Skydance Media, maybe at a significant risk of falling short, as Sony and Apollo Global Management prepare to make a significantly better offer that will benefit all shareholders of the company. Now, the S&P 500 closed down 5% from its late March record closing high. The volatility index, the VIX, broke above 20 overnight as tensions between Iran and Israel escalated. That's the highest since late October. It was last back to 1871. Often called Wall Street's fear gauge, the VIX is an options-based measure of investor demand for protection against near-term stock swings, and it's climbed in recent weeks as signs of stubborn inflation eroded expectations of how deeply the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates this year, and as worries grow over a spreading conflict in the Middle East. The VIX has not closed above 20 for 121 straight days. That's the longest streak since 2018. While the VIX has climbed to its highest point in months, it remains well below levels that in the past would have marked a crescendo of investor fears. Maybe that could be a sign that there could be some downside to come, although the growing short-term options may not be reflected in the VIX at all. And short sellers have been raking it in over the last 30 days as receding bets of an early interest rate cut by the US Federal Reserve triggered a sell-off in the equity market. Traders have made a mark-to-market profit of more than $25 billion up to Thursday from covering their short positions. That's more than erasing their $14.8 billion in losses so far this year. Short sellers were in a bind for most of the last year as a raging bull market, particularly powered by the enthusiasm around AI, as well as hopes for an early interest rate cut, forced them to book nearly $190 billion of losses for 2023. The current weakness in the market allows them to cover a portion of those heavy losses. Treasury yields have gone higher, with the 10-year at 4.623 and the 2-year at 4.988, still reflecting a curve inversion, and importantly, raising the discount rate applied to future earnings, which suggests that many shares are now well overvalued. Crude prices have handed back a large portion of Friday's gains that followed those reports of Israeli missiles striking Iran in volatile trading. US crude futures traded up 0.62% to $83.25 a barrel, while Brent contracts climbed 0.31% to $87.21 a barrel. Both benchmarks actually fell around 3% this week as US economic resilience led financial markets to expect the Federal Reserve could delay cutting those interest rates, potentially hitting further activity in the world's largest consumer. Additionally, economic data from China, the world's biggest importer of crude, suggested domestic demand remains frail, even as the economy grew faster than expected in the first quarter. Gulf futures remained strong, last at $2,406.75 and up 0.36% on Friday. When there are geopolitical tensions, the natural response is for investors to flee to gold, which is happening now. And central bank purchases are also placing a floor beneath the prices. The US dollar remains in the ascendancy, with the DXY at 106.12, which is of course putting pressure on many other economies, including the euro, yen, yuan, and Aussie dollar. The Fed's hawkish stance on monetary policy has forced investors to rethink their expectations of a US rate cut, but meanwhile, the European Central Bank's monetary policy outlook remains broadly unchanged, and that pushed the euro-US dollar lower. Currently, traders are still pricing in a nearly 100% probability that the ECB will cut interest rates this summer, while the Fed is expected to deliver the first rate cut reduction only in September or, as I've discussed, later. Once the ECB starts cutting, it will be apparent that global central banks will face divergent monetary policy easing cycles, and that will just exacerbate the strength of the dollar against the euro and other major currencies. But if Eurozone data exceeds forecasts, then, of course, the ECB might be forced to delay a rate cut. In fact, on Friday, Bank of America revised its forecast for the euro-US dollar currency pair. Now it's expecting it to reach $1.12 by the end of the year, down from the previously anticipated $1.15. Bank of America stated that a stronger US dollar would likely depend more on real money market movements rather than speculative trades. This perspective takes into account the actual flow of funds by institutional investors as opposed to short-term bets made by traders. In Europe, the euro-US dollar rose 0.1% to 1.0656 after German producer prices fell less than expected in March, decreasing by 2.9% on the year, compared with a forecast of 3.2% decline. Additionally, it seems the German government will raise its growth forecast for the German economy this year to 0.3% from a previously forecast 0.2%, all of which, of course, may cool the ECB. The pound US dollar fell 0.53% to 1.2370, trading just above five-month lows as British retail sales stagnated in March. Sales volumes showed no growth at all last month. That was below the expected 0.3% increase, representing the first time that they've not grown in monthly terms since December. Weakness in retail spending makes it more likely the Bank of England will start cutting interest rates in the summer, probably before the Federal Reserve, but inflation is still way above their target. And with inflation slowing and interest rates likely to come down soon, there is improving confidence among UK consumers about the outlook for their finances. Just. An early Easter boosted food spending in Britain last month, lifting retail sales by the most since August, although wet weather dampened demand for garden furniture, home improvement products, clothing and footwear, according to the British Retail Consortium, though. Tesco, Britain's largest retailer, said last week that it was seeing early signs of improving consumer sentiment, but it was still well off recent highs. Bond issuance is the main way governments finance themselves on financial markets. That happens mostly at auctions, where the banks designated as primary dealers buy the bonds and then sell them to other investors. But hedge funds are piling into the Eurozone's $10 trillion government bond market, scenting opportunities as funding needs surge and as the European Central Bank retreats. The funds are buying a large share of government debt sales, providing a source of much-needed capital. Yet the lightly regulated investors often load their bets with bank debt, tying their fortunes to lenders at a time when there is growing regulatory concern globally about their market impact. Hedge funds accounted for a record 55% of European government bond trading volumes on Tradeweb last year. That's up from 36% in 2020, displacing other financial firms to become the dominant players for the first time. And their reach was largest in some of Europe's most indebted nations. Hedge funds comprised two-thirds of trading volumes of Italian debt, for example. Analysts at Barclays estimate in January that the Eurozone debt market needs to absorb a record 675 billion euros, or $735 billion, of additional bonds this year as the ECB winds down its bond holdings. That comes as the pandemic and war in Ukraine have propelled government borrowing. And meanwhile, banks find their balance sheets constrained by rules introduced after the financial crisis of 2008. So cue the hedge funds, lured by interest rates that have returned to positive territory after almost a decade. And while hedge funds contribute to market liquidity, their increased presence strengthens the case for tightening their regulatory oversight. Banks typically have formal commitments as so-called primary dealers to buy government bonds and to trade them actively in good times and bad. But hedge funds have no such obligation. They're the first to leave the party if things get rough, and the presence of hedge funds trading may also contribute to price swings. Germany's benchmark 10-year bond yield is nearly 30 basis points higher than its target 2024, meaning tighter financial conditions, and Germany's interest rate-sensitive 2-year bond yields fell only slightly as market rate cut expectations rose. Traders have become a little more confident that cuts could well start in June, seeing perhaps a 90% chance, up from 85 earlier on Thursday. ECB chief Christine Lagarde emphasized that the bank would have seen a lot more data in June. Another source of comfort was relative optimism on wage growth, which the bank has singled out as the single most important factor determining whether it can cut rates. But for now, what may be more significant for Eurozone markets is the spillovers from swings in US rate cut expectations and treasuries, given that the Eurozone and US bonds have moved in tandem at a record pace recently. In terms of markets, the DAX was down 0.53%, while the CAC 40 in France was around 8,022, and the FTSE in London was up 0.24%. Now, looking at Asia, Most Asian stocks fell sharply on Friday after reports of Israeli strikes on Iran further ramped up concerns over worsening geopolitical conditions in the Middle East, while persistent warnings on US interest rates also battered sentiment. Technology stocks were the worst performers, with chip makers leading losses after heavyweight TSMC scaled back its outlook for expansion in the chip industry this year. The stock slid over 6% in Taiwan trade. The report severely dented risk appetite, sparking broad-based losses across Asian markets. Japanese stocks were the worst hit, with the Nikkei 225 falling 2.53%, while the TOPIX also fell. Japan's Advantes Corp and Tokyo Electron lost 5.7% and 7.5% respectively. Japan's consumer price index inflation rose as expected in March, with its pace of growth slowing slightly from the prior month amid some softer spending trends, which also saw core CPI inflation miss expectations. Core CPI, which excludes volatile fresh food prices, grew 2.6% year on year in March, according to the official data that was released on Friday. The data was slightly below expectations of 2.7% and down from the 2.8% seen last month. The reading was now at its lowest pace of growth since November 2022, having fallen sharply from a 40-year peak hit last year. Headline CPI rose 2.7% in March from 2.8% in the prior month, in line with expectations. Japanese consumer inflation has steadily eased over the past year, coming closer to the Bank of Japan's 2% annual target as consumer spending slowed in the face of sluggish wage growth, a weak yen, and easing economic growth. But this trend is expected to change in the coming months, especially as major Japanese labor unions won bumper increases in wages this year. The Bank of Japan has also enacted its first ever interest rate hike in 17 years in March, citing expected stickiness in inflation as wages grew, but future rate hikes by the central bank remain uncertain, indicating that Japanese monetary policy is still likely to stay loose in the near term. The US dollar Japanese yen traded 0.1% higher at 154.65 as the Japanese currency remained near 34-year lows, prompting caution over possible government intervention. Losses in China were somewhat limited by persistent optimism over more stimulus measures. Gains came especially after stronger than expected gross domestic product data for the first quarter, which showed strong economic growth in China. Morgan Stanley analysts noted that while sentiment had improved, risks in Chinese markets still persisted, particularly from more stock market regulation, weakness in the Chinese economy, and a soft outlook for earnings. The Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices lost 0.79 and 0.29% respectively, but losses in tech dragged the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index down 0.99%. The US dollar yuan edged slightly higher to 7.2403, with the yuan near 5-month highs amid uncertainty over the Chinese economy. The People's Bank of China actually has been steadily increasing its exposure to gold. This has encouraged buying from Chinese consumers, who are purchasing record levels of gold at a time when China's property market is under severe pressure and its share market is languishing. Chinese households are increasingly funneling their savings into gold. India's Nifty 50 index was higher and last at 20,149 as the elections run. Australian shares tumbled for their seventh fall in 8 sessions on Friday as investors brought bonds and gold on worries around the Israeli military action in the Middle East. Australian stocks fell to a 3-month low on Friday, losing 2.8% over the week for its worst performance in more than 6 months. The ASX 200 dropped 0.98% to 7,567.3. That's the lowest level in almost 3 months, and it closed at 7,555.4 points on January 25th. For the week, the benchmark index lost 2.8%. The interest rate sensitive technology and real estate sectors were the worst performers, down 1.6% and 1.5% respectively, but every sector finished lower. Energy was the best performer as oil prices rose after Iran flagged an unspecified Israeli attack. Iran produces about 3 million barrels of oil today, about 3% of global oil supplies, mainly to China and Asia. And in the event of a full-blown war, Iran could block the Straits of Hormuz, which carries around 20 million barrels of oil a day, according to Shane Oliver, the chief economist at AMP. Energy producer Santos was among the best performers, in closing up 1.8% to $7.83, as oil firmed. Gold miners also advanced as the precious metal topped $2,400 an ounce during the trading session. Perseus Mining added 1.3% to $2.30, and De Grey Mining climbed 1.1% to $1.35. The worst performer on the benchmark share index was Karoon Energy. It lost 5.4% to $2.10 after downgrading guidance for oil production at its Brazilian tenements in financial year 2024. The Australian dollar slipped to 63.9 cents, near a five-month low, although it did move a little higher later. AMP's Oliver warned that if oil prices were to top $100 a barrel, it would add about 15 cents a litre to Australian petrol prices. And finally, in crypto, the weekend marks the highly anticipated Bitcoin halving event, which will reduce the supply of new coins. While the short-term impact may be muted, long-term investors remain optimistic due to its historical correlation with price surges. But Bitcoin remains trapped within the consolidation phase that began in March. If a fresh wave of selling erupts due to global events, the critical support at $60,000 will, of course, be in focus. Since last summer, Bitcoin has been heavily influenced by ETF inflows. Investors have placed more than $12 billion into cryptocurrency exchange-traded funds listed in the US in the last month alone. Initially, spot Bitcoin ETF anticipation drove the price, but later the launch of such ETFs accelerated institutional buying, propelling Bitcoin to pre-halving highs. With institutions now holding a significant amount of Bitcoin, any slowdown in ETF sales could delay the halving's positive impact. The halving at the weekend will mark the fourth event of its kind since the first Bitcoin was produced on January 3, 2009. Following the halving, the number of Bitcoins being minted globally each day will drop from around 900 to 450. And generally, the price of Bitcoin rises after previous halving events. Despite tracking sideways for much of the last year, the price of the cryptocurrency is still up more than 50% since the start of the year. And that compares with a 5.6% return from the S&P 500 index and a small drop from the ASX 200 since January the 1st. While no spot Bitcoin ETF has yet been approved to list on the ASX, the global X21 shares Bitcoin ETF is locally listed on the smaller alternative COBE exchange and has also charted a strong 46% return in the last 3 months. But crypto has gone from being outside the system to now being fully incorporated within traditional finance, which is ultimately what the regulators wanted to see. Trading patterns suggest that it was institutional rather than retail investors that have been driving the bulk of flows since the ETFs launched. But Bitcoin's claim to be the equivalent of digital gold, which hold its value as government-issued currencies lose their purchasing power, has been thrown into question by the events of the past month. Bitcoin, the largest digital currency, hit a record high near $74,000 in mid-March, but has struggled to consolidate at that level. Instead, the cryptocurrency has endured a series of volatile corrections, followed by abrupt recoveries. Bitcoin's weakness has coincided with declines in other risk assets. The US share market has faltered, with both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 retreating from their own all-time highs as US bond yields have climbed to their highest levels in months. This suggests that rather than acting as a safe haven, cryptocurrencies are extremely sensitive to investor risk sentiment, which has been dealt a blow this week as rate cut hopes have dimmed. At the same time, Bitcoin enthusiasts point out that although the digital currency may be volatile, it has significantly outperformed traditional safe haven assets such as gold and US government bonds over the past 4 years of turmoil, which have witnessed a global pandemic and an inflationary surge. And you can join me for my live show on Tuesday with Adam Stokes to delve into the cryptos in more detail. But standing back, you can see there's a lot of uncertainty out there, as I've been talking about in recent weeks. I do think the higher bond rates are significant because that increases the discount on the value of future income from companies, which are significantly overvalued. So unless things change dramatically, I think we're going to see further falls in the markets ahead. And certainly it's time to buckle up and just take the ride. It's certainly true, I think, that we're going to see more volatility ahead. While it may be that markets will try to reassert themselves, I think risks to the downside are there, and I do expect markets to continue lower ahead. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.